Here we go.
This is episode 10 of Captain Says, and it's been about, I think, 11 months since the last episode, so it's about time we did another one. And this is a world first. We have the same guest back again, all the way back from, I think, episode 2. It is Seth Everett. Hello.
Oh, hello. Yes, that's right. Episode 2. We did it on June 4th, 2015.
Just a little while ago.
Dude, we were kids. We were kids right then.
That was so long ago, I don't even remember.
Yeah, but you did Jesse first. That's all I remembered.
He was available at 2:30 in the morning. What can I say?
Well, he has a different calendar than I do.
Is there anything to talk about? I guess there is.
Well, we haven't spoken. You and I have spoken since Prince passed.
Yeah.
I spoke to you that week. I loved the Peach and Black that you guys did about it. I was with MC when he died because so that's always going to be ingrained in my brain. Like, that's always a memory. And then I did a tribute, and I thought about having one of you guys on. I do a sports podcast, and I did a tribute, but I didn't want it somebody from that world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want it one of you guys. I didn't want it somebody that I worked with on the Spreecast. I didn't want it somebody in Paisley Park. I didn't want to do that. So there was this football player that played in the NFL, and I used to work with him at Fox, and it turns out that he met him when he was playing for the Atlanta Falcons.
Uh-huh.
And so he had a cool story, and we did this podcast, and we had audio issues, because what's a podcast without audio issues? So we lined it with instrumental Prince music for like an hour and a half. We found enough tracks from Expectation to C-Note to News to Arboretum from One Night Alone. Like, we just put a bunch of instrumental tracks underneath, and people who listened to it really dug that. Like, they were like, can you two guys shut up? I just want to listen to that instrument.
So you played full-length tracks for that whole show.
We did, because I figured, you know, first of all, if enough people are listening to that podcast that they want to come after me, we'll delete it. It was a tribute, and really it was more about the fact that we had an audio, like we had like a distortion from our audio, and I wanted to cover it somehow. Like, the subject was Prince, why not use Prince?
That's it.
I know. You guys have your rules. You guys only play like, what, 8 seconds of a song or somewhere?
I think the most we ever did was about 14. I think we can actually go up to, I think, 30 under the Australian, like, fair use laws, but we only ever do like 8 to 12 seconds or something.
Right, but that's if you were live on the radio. There's rules about the radio. Podcasting is a new space, and there are a lot of things that have not been well defined. You know, I end my sports podcast with If You Want Me to Stay by Sly and the Family Stone, and I play probably 45 seconds of that.
Oh, yeah.
If Sly wants to come out of hiding and come after me for that, he's more than willing.
He's not really hiding. He's living in his van in L.A. somewhere. He's fine.
All right.
You can go and find him. Go and give him his $10 royalties.
If he wants to find me on Twitter, he can.
I've thought about doing that. I've thought about next time I'm in L.A., like, just try and find where he is and just go and say hi.
Like a Pokemon Go kind of thing.
Because he's just living in his van, like on some residential street.
What a great app. You go in your phone.
Find Sly.
Find Sly. And he moves.
There we go. Do we know any, like, app developers? Let's get that started.
That'd be very...
Just get people rocking up every day. I found him.
Could you imagine?
You probably wouldn't like that. So,
what's going on in the world?
Well,
we could do Prince first, or if you want to talk about this fine country that I come from.
Well, today,
both suck.
Literally today, Forever is released with Moonbeam Levels.
Yep.
So that's something. For some reason, they pushed the date in Australia back to Friday, so I've got to wait another 4 days if I wanted to go and buy it. 3 days.
You mean that's the first time I have something before you?
Possibly. Possibly.
Because I could literally bicycle the Forever CD to your house in Australia and it still wouldn't be even.
But the good thing is that I saw on, I guess, iTunes, you can buy just the single tracks. You don't need to buy, you know, a $20 whatever it's going to cost album to get that one track now. Which is what I thought they would do.
Yeah, I thought they would do that for that song, Glam Slam, Alphabet Street. You know, songs that couldn't have been available on iTunes previously.
Yeah, so it's good you can just spend your, you know, $1.29 and buy the one track that everybody wants.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
No, it's good. Look, it's very nicely done. It's nicely put together. I mean, my complaints about it, it's not their fault. They didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
It's not his whole career. You can't have that. It's been well documented, his different record companies, you know, after 1992. So, you know, to do it and just qualify this particular era, the song choices are unique. I mean, there's no Raspberry Beret on it, but there's got to stop messing about. Okay. I was like, I don't understand that, you know.
Because that was a huge hit back in the early 80s. I remember that. You must have missed it. Yeah, it's a few weird choices on there. Monster hit of 1980.
Right. It says in the liner notes, from the hits, the B-sides. It's just odd. Mountains is on there. Okay. I'm fine with it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is Mountains didn't get on to the hits, the B-sides, 3-disc set, but they were put out on, like, the singles.
Right. Peach was. Peach was on the hits.
And the Mountains B-side. Was on a single as well.
Right. Mountains was a single, but it wasn't on
it
the hits.
It was like a B-side of one of the singles from the hits.
Oh, really? That's odd.
Mountains and, I think, Alexa de Paris and something else.
I would love to know, like, did they put them all in a hat? Like, how do you... I would love to know the song choices. I would love to know how they came up with the order. What were they thinking? I'm just curious because who's making that call?
Yeah.
Is it the attorneys? Is it the family? Is it... The whole thing is so strange.
The funny thing I noticed was on, like, some of the promotion for it, they're like, out of these 40 tracks, like, you know, 22 of them are previously unreleased on CD. And it's just because they're like radio edits and stuff like that.
Right.
That's not a big selling point to most people, but I guess they've figured out, oh, you know, there's a whole bunch of crazy Prince collectors who will buy absolutely any version of any track. Even if it's only 8 seconds difference to the previously available track, these collectors will buy it. So let's find as many like non-standard versions of these tracks. And it'll just give them more reasons for the collectors to buy it, even though they really only want the one track.
I mean, you're exactly right. They are just trying to do something to not make it like the 3 previous greatest hits.
Yeah.
And if you're a fan, the music's great. I mean, it's some of his all-time classics. They're great songs. It's just, it's weird. The whole thing is just strange. Moonbeam Levels is one of my top 5 Prince songs, but it has been for years. Is it a cleaner version? Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds outstanding.
Yeah.
It also sounded great when Elvis Costello performed it at Carnegie Hall in 2013, and everyone was like, what? What? What?
What? What is this?
What is this? Uh-huh. What's the big surprise? So it's fine. It's a cash-in. There's lots of them. I was on NBC Sports Radio Sunday, and I do this radio show, and all of a sudden on Twitter, I saw that Prince had won, or Purple Rain had won, an American Musical
Award.
And we had just had this conversation because a pitcher in Major League Baseball, in American baseball, passed away tragically in a boating accident. He was 24 years old. Mm. And I knew him. And I love this guy. He was my favorite pitcher. And I bought his jersey and I did, you know, shows about him. And I went on in Miami and this whole thing. And I brought up at the time, should he win what is equivalent the Best Pitcher Award? It's called the Cy Young Award. And the Cy Young Award is for the best pitcher of the year. He would be in the top 10, but he's not the best pitcher of the year. Do you give it to him because he died?
Yeah.
Okay. So all of a sudden, Purple Rain wins this award. And I'm not obsessed with Twitter. I'm obsessed with Twitter, but not Prince Twitter, I guess. And I didn't notice that he was even nominated. I didn't understand why he'd be nominated. The album came out 30 years ago.
Well, that's the only thing that I could figure was because he died and then everybody went and bought Purple Rain, right. Because it got to a certain amount of sales, then again, it was eligible. It charted. It was eligible. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I looked that up and it was 5 million. He sold 5 million copies of Purple Rain since he died.
After April, yeah.
Right. And so in 2016, it qualified.
That is huge album sales, actually.
Oh, in this day and age?
Yeah, in this day, that is massive.
It's big, and so that's why it qualified. I felt bad for the other two albums. Like, you had no shot.
Yeah, but it was just like Star Wars and...
Star Wars and Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad, I found out, was original songs, where Star Wars was just the instrumental, and, I mean, it's an iconic instrumental, but it was so awkward. And I will give it up, Prince's sister spoke eloquently. She spoke beautifully.
I saw, I watched that, and probably for the first time in 4 or 5 months, again, there were tears in my eyes. But then I get online, and it's like 50-50. Oh, she was really nice, and it was heartfelt. And then the other half are like, oh, she's so fake. I can't stand her.
No.
I believe...
I don't know how people call her fake. She's not prepared to be in the public eye.
Yeah, yeah. When I first watched it, that was before I read anything, and I believed what she was saying. But then I also got the feeling that she's so aware that she's on stage and so many people are watching these awards.
Yep.
But I still thought it was believable. But then I get online and everyone's like, oh, whatever. And I'm like, no, not whatever. It was fine.
I liked it better than when she was interviewed by Al Roker.
Oh, yeah, that was a bit strange.
I thought that was awkward as all get out. And so, I mean, I'm not a huge Al Roker fan, but... No, he got into a controversy where he just started railing. There was a guy who was a comedian, radio host in the United States, who made an unfortunate comment. The guy had a 30-year career, did more charitable things than you can count, and he made a joke in poor taste. And a lot of African American people started, you know, Al Sharpton and all these you know,
the same guys come out every time, yeah.
Right. So they started coming out, and Al Roker suddenly just went on this diatribe, like out of nowhere. Like, he never even listened to the guy. You don't know a thing about him. And I lost so much respect for Al Roker. And it just bugged me because it was a good guy that did a bad thing, not a bad guy. You know, there's a difference. Yeah. But Al Roker got the gig, I guess, and he goes out there and, you know, they're giving this weird tour. And, you know, then you see the stuff online that the tour guys don't know what they're doing. And they don't know any of the Prince's history. Yeah. And they're the guys that are doing it. And they're making like 14 bucks an hour. It's just the whole thing is just like
it's amateur hour.
It really is. It's a comedy, and the amount of cash-ins, you know, between merchandise that pops up out of nowhere, and the
only thing with Al Roker going out there, I thought, I mean, that's NBC Today show. I can only guess that Tamron didn't want to do it or wasn't comfortable doing it because she would have been the perfect person for that job,
right?
But
right,
because
she knows the story. I mean, she knew him. I don't think, you know, I said this to you off air when he passed. His personal life means nothing to me. Mm. You know what I mean? Like I feel for Tamron's loss. I love the story that I knew for about a month before you, that when MC met Damaris Lewis.
Yeah.
I'm not intimating that Prince was with her, but like they were, you know, together. They were friends. And... Damaris didn't know who MC was. All of a sudden he says, well, we do this podcast in Australia. And the next thing you know, she's hugging him and she's, you know, he's taking pictures with a supermodel and he's, and, you know, like that's the level of when, Susanna, Melvoin tells all the stories about the parties they used to go to in the '80s. Like, I feel like it's dirty. Like I'm prying into this guy's life. Whereas now what I'd love to see is that the place is turned into a great place, something Prince would have wanted, something he'd be proud of. And that was the point of what I tweeted today was, you know, the irony is we're recording this on the day that Forever is released. Today's also the day that the Black Album was released.
Yes.
An album that Prince didn't want released.
Mm.
And I just wonder, like, what's the end game here? Like, in Prince's mind, did he never want Moonbeam Levels released? Well, that's the first thing they did.
Yeah, and it's not like...
Can Grand Progression be next?
And it's not like it's one of those tracks that, you know, he thought it didn't fit at the time and then it came out on a later album. It never came out. It was never, you know, like... No Room. What's that song that he re-recorded like years ago?
Extra Lovable?
No, oh, well, yeah, that's one. Large light room.
In a large room with no light.
That one. I couldn't think of the name. He re-recorded that, and he's like, yeah, this can go out, but Moonbeam Levels, never.
Never. He performed it in...
A few years back. Once,
yeah, a couple years ago. He performed it in a concert, and you just kind of wondered, and it was after the Elvis Costello thing, and I just thought the Elvis Costello thing was, that was a deep cut. Like, I had never heard that song, obviously, live, and all of a sudden it came out of nowhere. And that's some of his best stuff is stuff that, you know, has been circulating. And we're not just talking about the stuff on YouTube in the last, you know, 6 months. It's stuff that's been traveling for decades. I mean, literally decades. And you just kind of wonder, like, were they sitting in a room and they have all these master tapes and they're sifting through it and, you know, digitizing it, I hope, and doing all these different things. And then they said, all right, Warner Brothers wants to cash in. We got to give them something. Like, who was the guy that stepped up and said, you know what, it's time. You know, the public deserves to hear Moonbeam Levels. What conversation is that?
I'm sure there's it wouldn't have been that hard for them to choose that track because there's a bunch of fan voted, you know, what's the best unreleased tracks, and that's always up there in the top two or three. Yep. So they could have just looked at any one of those like little polls and were like, well, yeah, that'll do.
Yep. It's nice. In America, I don't know how it is in Australia. In America, they play the same three songs.
Yep.
If I never hear Kiss again, it's too soon. You know, even Purple Rain has been Purple Rain used to be the song that you never played, but then when he'd perform it live, you'd be like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's just become this song that every time that they try to tell a story about him, that's what comes out.
That's what
you know what I mean?
Is,
like,
yeah.
And it's these three songs, and it's just a very strange. And even all those tributes that they did on those award shows, they were all from like 1983 to 1987. Mm. Like, the guy had 39 albums. It just to characterize his career as one part. There's a strong argument that say his best work is not the 80s. Now, I'm not necessarily of that theory, but I could if you make that case, I could buy that.
Yeah.
There are people who think the 90s is the best Prince ever did. There's people who think today's stuff is the best he ever did.
Yeah.
And none of those people are wrong.
But what they're doing is what they're going to play on Good Morning America when they do a story about him, they're going to play Purple Rain or 1999 or Little Red Corvette because that's what the general public are going to remember. They're not going to remember that Peach was a single or, you know.
Well, that's what I thought Tyga did.
I Hate You. They're not going to play that stuff. They're not even going to play The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. They're going to play something from Purple Rain or Kiss or 99 or Little Red Corvette, and that's about it. Because that's what probably 90% of the general public, if you say, what's a Prince song, they'll say one of those four or five songs. Because that's what they play on the radio every time.
That's what I love.
Not that, these random tracks did. That everyone else knows.
Right. That's what I love that Tyga did. She quoted one song.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Is, you have to be hardcore to even reference.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like about 99 that came out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On Love for One Another website.
Did I tell you the Christopher Tracy story?
I don't know.
You'll love this. So I work for WCBS 880 in New York. It's a radio station. I do sports there. And part of the contract is you're a fill-in anchor on another station. Okay, it's a Bloomberg station.
Yeah.
But because of union rules or radio rules or something, you can't be Seth Everett on both stations.
Yeah.
You can't be Seth Everett on competing stations. So the when they gave me the gig, they said, by the way, you need to come up with another name. And as a joke, this was in May, so he had just died. And it was in May, and I said, well, that's it. I'm changing my name to a symbol. And she laughed and said, all right, just think about it and get back to me. And I got in my car, and my iPhone does the shuffle. You know shuffle?
Yep.
And the first song that came on when I put my key in the ignition, it just automatically does it. Like, I don't turn it on, was Christopher Tracy's Parade.
There you go.
So I emailed her, and I said, do you mind if when I do sports on this other station, if I'm Christopher Tracy? And she said, yeah, that's fine. Is that like a childhood friend of yours? I said, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
And that was it. Cause you have to be a diehard. Like to understand Tyga, to understand her quoting one song is deep. You have to be a diehard fan. And to know the name Christopher Tracy and to connect that to Under the Cherry Moon.
Yeah.
You would have had to have seen it in the last 3 years, you know? And so And I don't, you know, I tweet when I go on the air somewhere because my whole thing is that promotes the station. The station gets something like that. That's why I do it. And I can't do it because it's not me on this other station. So I always write, I tweet, there's some guy on Bloomberg named Christopher Tracy. You think he's seen Under the Cherry Moon? And I don't know if anybody gets it, but yeah, that's my Christopher. Story.
Well, you've given it away now. You've blown this whole system up now.
Yep, and I play Sly and the Family Stone on my other podcast.
I was just actually reading something, like literally yesterday, about a similar thing that used to happen here on the radio that was in like 70s and 80s. I don't know if it still applies now, but yeah, there was people who worked on one station and then for whatever reason they were on another station. They had to have a different name.
Different name. It's an older thing. I just think in this day and age of digital, I don't think it matters. But you know, again, I wasn't going to be a malcontent. I just thought it was funny because, you know, if there's ever a guy synonymous with name changes,
yes.
You know, and I've told this story. This is public. I don't give the reveal of it. But Seth Everett's not my real name.
Yeah,
like that's my middle name. And I changed it in 1993, the same year he changed it. It was one of the things where I needed an idea because my name was hard to pronounce. And I was trying to get a job in a media industry that name recognition was everything.
Yeah.
You know? And a perfect example, when you guys created the podcast, the Peach and Black podcast, you guys all gave yourselves code names. Like, you weren't going to just be your real first and last names. Like, so this idea, I understood it. You know what I mean? Like, when he changed his name, you know, the media thought it was crazy. I just got it because I was doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had done mine like 5 months prior because a teacher, a college professor had said, what's your middle name? And I was like, Everett. And he said, well, you know, auditions are for the campus television station. When you go audition, try that name. And I did it. And it worked. And I tried it. And then all of a sudden, in 93, first he retired.
Yeah.
I remember that. And then all of a sudden.
Not for the first time either.
Right, right. He retired. And then within, you know, a couple of weeks, this symbol came out. And I was just like, holy moly, like how forward thinking that was. So when this woman says to me, you know, again, a month after Prince dies, she says, you got to go on Bloomberg, but you can't do it as Prince. I said, oh, okay.
Victor. You should be Victor next time.
Yeah, right?
And no surname, just Victor.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Coming up next, it's Victor.
Yeah, Victor Sacrifice.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, it's been an interesting time, and it's been an interesting stretch. A lot of people have done interviews recently. I mean,
every person who ever like saw him across a room has a story.
Well, even you guys. You guys, you know, you had Ida Nielsen on. She was brilliant. I thought she was great on your show, and I had never heard her speak before.
Mm, that was a good interview.
Oh, that was a great interview. And the other one was Tony M., which was great. And if he's alive, there's no way either one of them say yes to the Peach and Black. Like, there's no way.
Well, you know, the funny thing about the Tony M one is I contacted him probably at least a year and a half ago.
That's great.
Just out of nowhere. And, yeah, it wasn't until a month or two ago he replied and he's like, yeah, okay, let's do this.
That's great.
And I haven't seen him do any other interview anywhere. And I think that might be because probably after Prince died, you know, not everyone's first reaction would be, oh, let's contact Tony M for an interview. But I'm sure some people did.
Yeah.
And he would have looked at them and he's like, they're only coming to me now because, you know, of this. But we might have been the only one who contacted him ages ago.
Prior, which is right.
So he knew our intention wasn't anything to do with that, you know.
But I'll give a shout out real quick. The best thing about podcasts is none of them compete against each other. You know, if you're listening to this one, then, you know, I hope you listen to mine and I hope you listen to Peach and Black. And, you know, like it's not live radio. And I think that's why it's the future of the spoken word, because they don't compete. You know, if you listen to a show I do, that's wonderful, but listen to my competitors too. You know what I mean? Like, podcast. That's what podcasts are great. Anyway, but I want to give a special shout out to my former co-host on Spreecast, which was Dr. Funkenberry, because he started a podcast. Now, I don't know. Look, I speak to him casually, but I don't know when he came up with the idea to do the podcast, but I believe it was before he died. And then since then, the motherload of people have come in, sat with him, and told countless stories. He's had engineers. He's had road engineers, studio engineers. He had Adrian Crutchfield, who's great. He's been on, you know, he was on our show. He's had all these guests. And I'm thinking to myself, when in the world were these guys that open to tell those kinds of stories?
Never.
Never.
The weird thing is, like, we did the Eater interview and Tony M, but I'm not a big fan of actually doing interviews. Because, you know, like you said, it's not a competition. Like, if Dr. Funkenberry wants to interview all these guys, then I'm like, let him do that. We don't need to do that. There's already someone doing that.
Right. And but he's also doing a show. I mean, I know he has a producer, sidekick, co-host, whatever he is. But you guys have the four of you. And I think what makes your show great is the interplay with the four of you. Whereas I want to hear you guys review shows and review maybe movies, maybe review... you could review like the obscure movies. Like, I would love to hear you guys do Three Chains of Gold and tell me about that the swimming scene. And I want you guys to break that down.
It was filmed in Sydney. I mean, we did the Eater interview because she was here and we went to the clinic and I'm like, well, okay, she's here. Why not? And the Tony M thing I'd already arranged, but I'm not really going to go like chasing people to interview. If it happens, it happens. Just out of chance, that's fine. But I'm not running around chasing people for interviews. But, just saying about with that Tony M interview, there's a thread on Prince.org in the Associated People, and it's just so you go to find that, and there's a post, and it's like, new Tony M interview. And you read through that thread, and it's just like you're in this alternate reality where there's a Prince.org thread, which is almost all positive. It's really weird to read. Like, I'm reading through it, and I'm like, am I really on this website right now? It's just funny because it's generally on the negative side most of the time. So to read through that Tony M thread, like, I'm happy everyone got something out of listening to that interview, but it's just weird to see an org thread which is positive, like, almost all the way through.
I love that he was so open about what happened when they started recording with him as the lead for what turned into Gold Nigga.
Yeah.
Which I hate that word, but that's the title
of it. That's the name of it.
Album. And I love the empowerment that he felt, and then Prince changed his mind.
Yeah.
You know, which as you would see, would happen 76 times.
Yeah.
You know, so you see the whole thing happen because Adrian Crutchfield just said to Dr. Funkenberry, he said that Prince promised the Horns that they would play Saturday Night Live.
Uh-huh.
And he changed his mind. And that was what he did. And it was just, it's interesting because those stories, you never, they would do interviews. Don't get me wrong. Adrian Crutchfield would do interviews. He came on our show in 2013. Prince was alive and well. But the fact is the nature in which these guys are so open is amazing. Dave Hampton, this guy who was a Paisley Park engineer for all those years, he's telling a million stories. And I don't think he's speaking out of school. It's refreshing to hear, but I don't think he would ever be a guy that would openly agree to have that kind of a conversation if Prince is still around.
Well, the thing is, I remember it was just after Prince passed away and people were coming out with their, you know, story of, I met him and this is what happened. And yeah, a few people were saying, if Prince was here, you wouldn't be talking about that. But then the other argument was, you know, this was their life. This was their experience. Right. This was their truth. Why can't they say that?
Right.
Which is the point, really.
Right. I don't see salacious would be, you know,
that's another step.
The women saying there were harems and, you know, the or if anyone speaks out of school saying they saw him taking pills.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a podcast. That's not an interview. These guys telling stories about when he played tricks on the guys or what his reaction was, you know, these stories about when he would, you know, tell those guys they have to be ready in like 3 days because they're playing a 20,000 seat arena in, you know, Detroit. Like, those stories are hilarious.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And that's been really, I don't want to say healing, but it's been really fun to listen to. Like, they've been great. I think Funkenberry's show has been great. I thought you guys, you know, the two interviews that you guys did was great. And I'll take that over any of those cockamamie award shows or any of that nonsense.
Was there any, I hadn't seen the AMAs yet, was there any sort of tribute for Prince?
I don't know. I don't think so because it wasn't on Twitter. I saw the thing on Twitter when Purple Rain won and she spoke. Yeah. And
that's probably all there was.
I was on the radio and I listened to it during a commercial break because, it, you know, people had clipped it already. And it was, I just thought it was very eloquent. And we're not living her life. First of all the stuff that you think you know about her past is rumor. You know, there's no biographies about her. And she's thrust into the public eye.
Yeah, there are a lot of rumors about what she's done previously.
Correct. And I don't have a reason to believe it or not to believe it.
Yeah.
I take it for what it's worth. But she's never somebody I sought out, and she's never somebody I wanted to get to know. I didn't know she existed until he died.
But you see, you're sort of like me. Is you're not that interested in his personal life and
right.
that whole side of it. It's not, you know, we're here for the music. All that other stuff is just, you know, periphery, external stuff. It's not, you know, some people are interested in that. We're not.
Right.
That's fine. You don't have to be interested in that if you don't want to be.
The stuff that about his life that I was interested in, the will, the lack of a will is dumbfounding.
Yeah.
The guy wrote songs. Listen to the lyrics of Moonbeam Levels. The guy wrote about dying for 30 years.
Yes.
Never once. And he was married twice.
Yeah, that is the ethics. I never even thought about that. How could you? Wow. Wow.
Married twice. I'll tell you when I got a will, when we found out we were expecting.
Yeah.
When I have two daughters. And when she was pregnant with the first one, we got a will. And I don't know where it is. I just know it exists. You know, I cannot believe he doesn't have a will. And this should all be done. Like, I would imagine in my mind's eye, I would imagine that he had a plan. Okay, 1 year out, this gets released. 2 years out, this gets released. Paisley Park turns into a museum then. This turns into this then. This, and it would just be executors of the will.
Yeah.
And that's
it is
stunning.
Bizarre.
As far as the you know, the pain and the medicine and all you know, him riding the bicycle to the CVS and all that stuff is just, that's Inquirer. That's yeah. salacious.
But yeah, that's just, you know, regardless of the fact of what him riding to the CVS implies.
Right.
That's, again, that's just his personal life, whether that was happening on April 20th or it was 4 years ago. So right. what? It's just him going about his daily things. Who cares?
Right. Were you the kind of fan, did you ever wonder what he did that day?
Not really.
Because no. there's a point to what I'm saying. There was a day where we did a show, when we did the Spreecast, where I remember Funkenberry called me and he said, you have to get this on this audio on the show. He wrote it this morning. And I went, what? It's Sunday. And he was like, yeah, he wrote it, recorded it, pressed it, emailed it, and yep. wanted us to play it on the show. And I was like, that's amazing. I don't think about what celebrities are doing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't wonder what, you know, did they go to IHOP this morning? Like, I don't care. And I don't think about when Prince is around. Like, now when he's touring, that's a different story because I want to hear the reactions. I love to hear. I love reading the reviews. I love it when fans who are big fans get to see him. That's always great to hear their reactions. Like, those kinds of things are fantastic. But, you know, he went to the movies. I don't care that he went to the movies.
Yeah, like, even when we met him in New York and, like, when we finally got to meet him, that was like the right. actually the second or third time. The first ones were just postponed because right. we were actually there for, like, I think, 4 or 5 days and we were supposed to meet him, and then he, you know, right. he couldn't
in
make
your
it
hotel,
and whatever.
Eating but, Burger King.
Yeah. But even when he canceled those times, I wasn't thinking, oh, I wonder what he's doing.
Right.
I don't think I thought that at all. It doesn't enter my brain. It's just, okay, that's not happening.
Right.
But in the question of Prince, there's no point even like questioning what's happening, because yeah, you'll never know.
Well, I think there's something to that. I think that, you know, a lot of times people are obsessed with the celebrity. I will tell you this story. My brother-in-law got a job with Getty Images
yeah.
as a photographer. And now you could classify him as a paparazzi.
Yeah.
He gets tips, like he lives in New York City. He gets tips that, Kate Upton is in, you know, Central Park, and he goes over there to try to grab a picture of her, and he sells the pictures. So he knows where all these people are at all times. And I was like, I couldn't live like that. I, that's
I was,
crazy.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I mean, it sounds like an easy job, really. It's like, okay, you get a call that someone's over there, so you get in a taxi, you go there, you take some photos. Yep. You sell it to a thing, you get your money. But for me, personally, that would just, like, damage my brain, because I don't care. Right. It'd be so hard.
It would be exhausting.
It would be, especially when you give zero shits about it. You just don't care.
Right.
Kate Upton, you know, I don't care.
Right.
Well, I don't care what she's doing in her private life or officially. I just don't care.
Well, there was that – remember that award that I was telling you about, that baseball award that I was saying?
Yeah.
Her boyfriend was the runner-up for that award. And she went on a rant about Twitter.
About not winning.
And, yeah, if you want to bleep this out, you can. But she said, I thought I was the only guy, only person that got to fuck Justin. That's what she said.
That's funny.
And she went off, and people were asking me on the radio, like, what did I think of Kate Upton's rant? And all I said, she sounds like a soccer mom.
If we're going to get onto the topic of America, I think they're really getting worse at accepting loss.
I can feel people pressing stop.
But don't you know, people, you know, losing things, they're getting really bad at, like, handling losing. It's just getting worse and worse. I mean, it used to be before, it's like, you know, if, like, just say that baseball thing, so the other guy doesn't win, you're like, okay, congratulations to him, he won. Okay.
Yeah, the other guy, oh,
you don't
oh
get
God.
On Twitter
she
and go,
off.
What the hell, this is bullshit.
Yep.
How the
she
hell did
off.
They choose him?
Yeah, she went absolutely bonkers, like, beyond bonkers. It was crazy, absolutely crazy.
Is it like a self-control issue?
Well,
I don't understand where it's coming from, like. It's weird.
Well, I do, you know, my favorite thing ever, my two favorite things that ever happened on Twitter have to do with celebrity. The one that's my personal favorite that affected me was when Whitney Houston died.
Yeah.
I never told you the story. So Whitney Houston died and her funeral was 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
And so it was a big local story. You know, traffic was all backed up and it was a big to do in New Jersey. And the story at the end of it was Bobby Brown walked out because he didn't like where he was sitting. And I just thought, and I had I had two little kids at the time, or I think I had just the one. And I, as a father, I was offended by that. Like, you do what you do for your kid. Like, who cares where your shit's sitting? Like, shut up. And I was so mad. And I had just been talking to somebody who has – I have this friend that has, like, 3 million followers. This guy, Gary V. Gary V on Twitter.
Well, just tell him to retweet Peach and Black
podcast. Yeah, right. Yeah, I wish. So anyway, he was telling me that in order to do proper promotional stuff, because I don't want it just to be a promotional vehicle, make sure that 60% of your tweets are your personality and the other 40%, because then when people see your tweets, they don't know that it's promotional. So when you promote it, it comes out more genuine. And I totally think that's...
Yes, I follow a few like bands and stuff, and it's just 100% promo. There's no personal thing at all. It's just like, here's a gig here, here's another show here, and that there's nothing else.
Right.
And that's annoying.
So, like, I don't think you take it away. You don't take the promotional stuff away because you're working for these networks that appreciate that you do it. So I do it. You know, one thing I learned how to do is tag photos.
Mm.
So now what I do for my NBC show, because there's like 10 or 11 reporters that we go around the country to talk to these football reporters. If I did a tweet for every one of them, I would put people to sleep. And what we figured out, we can tag all 10 in one tweet. So, I mean, it's little things like that. So anyway, so the story goes, Bobby Brown walked out. And I just said, as a father, that offends me. And I tweeted, the only thing I can do to properly punish Bobby Brown is I'm deleting my prerogative off my iPhone, effective immediately.
Yeah.
And that got retweeted 7,000 times. Like, it I was like, that's the greatest. Like, that's the greatest thing. And then the other example is, and this is a good segue to the other reason you want to have me on, which is the night that the United States captured and killed bin Laden.
Yeah.
I was at a baseball game. It was the New York Mets against the Philadelphia Phillies. I was working for the Phillies at the time. And we got a rule in the press box from the Phillies. Do not report this. This is unconfirmed that, you know, the White House is going to issue a statement. Do not put it on the scoreboard. Do not put it on the radio broadcast. Do not put it on the television broadcast. Don't acknowledge it at all. And by the fourth inning of that game, 50,000 people were chanting, USA.
Yeah.
USA. And I remember leaving the ballpark that night saying, this is Twitter's greatest night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is, to me, that was Twitter's greatest night when a country felt that pride because they were all checking their phones.
Mm.
I think is amazing. Like, I think there's great value in that.
The thing I like about Twitter is it's a lot more instant than Facebook. Like, I can look at Facebook in the morning and there'll be, you know, whatever post at the top. And I can look 2 hours later and the same thing is still there. That doesn't happen on Twitter because there's something coming up on Twitter like every few seconds.
Right, right.
So I've sort of lost a bit of interest in Facebook. I still use it, but Twitter, like for news and like instant things that are happening, Twitter's where it's at.
Yeah, I completely
agree.
It'll
get to Facebook eventually, but it takes a while.
Younger kids like millennials, they think Facebook is for their grandparents. They think, like, they're past Facebook.
Yeah, it's all
Instagram
Twitter and Snapchat.
Snapchat, yeah.
We're old, man. What are we doing?
I'm telling you, we're fossils. I'm a fossil that does podcasts.
Oh, I wasn't going to say there. I was going to say something.
Well, Twitter was fun on the election.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
I was actually off. See, for you, that those election results started coming in, like, late afternoon, all the way until, like, 2 a.m. But for me, yeah. It started at about 11 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
And went through to about 6 or 7 p.m. And I was off work that day, so I was just at home just watching this entire thing. It was great.
Oh, my goodness. It was to see the media get it so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, well, we should go a little further back. I had so many issues with the way the media covered the campaign. I thought the campaign was disgusting. The campaign was ugly, and I couldn't stand either one of them.
Mm.
And the greatest example was the reaction, not the act, the reaction. When Trump had that tape with Access Hollywood.
Billy Bush.
He got caught with a mic on and whatever. He got caught. He said what he said. It's not very presidential, but whatever. The idea that the commentators on like CNN, and I don't mean to single out CNN, but that was what I happened to have been watching. They used the word pussy.
Yeah. Over and over.
They said it. Like, they would repeat it. And
yeah. It's not like playing the video of him saying it was enough. They had to repeat it over and over.
And I just was like, where are our journalistic standards? Like, what has happened? It's amazing to me the way that all got covered. So then when the election happened, I think that the whole idea was so many of the commentators just wanted to be right that
it
felt like you were watching the upset of the century. You were watching Mike Tyson against Buster Douglas. Like, you didn't think that it was even possible that he was going to get elected.
Well, the funny thing is Billy Bush loses his job at NBC.
And he gets elected president.
And the guy who actually said it, he's going to be the president.
He laughed and he got fired.
Oh, man.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Is he an actual Bush or it's just a coincidence?
He's like a second cousin twice removed or something like that.
Okay.
You know, and he got into the fight at the Olympics with Ryan Lochte. Mm. Remember, Billy Bush was the guy who told the story that when Ryan Lochte made up the whole story about being held up at the Olympics in Rio, and he made up this whole cockamamie story because they had vandalized one of the embassies.
Yeah.
And that was a whole to-do. And Al Roker was involved in that too. And it's amazing. It's just my biggest complaint since the election, though, is Trump and in the Twitter.
He's
got to
stop.
He's
still going, yeah.
I mean, he took shots at the New York Times. Now, granted, New York Times is, you know, if you want to criticize their coverage and say it's slanted, you're right, but not when you're the president-elect.
Yeah.
You know, just be a leader. Be a president, please. And I just think that that's so disconcerting, you know, and that's the problem. And like, they had the incident with Hamilton, the Broadway show.
That was just a whole bunch of nothing, wasn't it?
Well, I will say this. You could argue whether or not the actors in the show were appropriate in saying what they said. I happen to love it because they were polite when they did it. They called him sir. Yeah. I just thought they were very respectful.
Didn't they basically just say, I hope you can be a leader for everyone or something?
For everyone. Well, because...
How is that offensive to anyone?
Well, but is it their place? Is it their...
Wasn't the show done? They were doing, like, a bow. They were done. After that...
I'm with you. I'm playing devil's advocate. I agree with you. I had no problem with it. They even stopped people from booing.
Yeah.
So people
Mike
make
Pence
a big...
says, I wasn't offended. Maybe it wasn't right. The best forum to say it,
but
he
Trump
was fine with it.
Rips them
Trump
on Twitter.
Loses it, yeah.
Right, and then Saturday Night Live, that was hysterical, you know, with Alec Baldwin, that was so funny, and Trump takes shots at that, like, dude, you won. Chill.
He can't help it. He can't help
relax,
himself.
Relax. I don't know. It's so disconcerting.
I mean, if I was there, if I was an American and I voted, it's pretty likely I would have voted Democrat.
You would have voted for Hillary. Who yeah. I had issues with as well.
But one person's qualified. One person has zero qualifications. It's not a hard choice. Where no matter what your party preference is, that shouldn't be a choice.
Right.
There's someone who's been there for like 26 years or whatever, and there's someone who's been there not even a single day in their life.
Right.
All
the things that I question about her have nothing to do with her inability to be a politician. She's a lifelong politician. She's had to endure great indignities in her life. She shouldn't have put her emails on a private server. She should have had full disclosure right away unless she had something to hide. And there's a question of her trustworthiness. But you could say that about every politician.
Exactly. She's a politician. And everyone's saying, but she's crooked Hillary. She lied. Tell me a politician who hasn't.
Who hasn't. Right. And the only difference is,
And Trump isn't a politician, and he's lied more than any of them.
Correct.
Every time he got up on stage at his rallies, like half the stuff that came out of his mouth was garbage.
He's a reality star. He was a businessman.
He's an entertainer.
I mean, and just this weekend, the same weekend when Hamilton and Saturday Night Live, he paid $25 million to settle lawsuits about his Trump University.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you want to split hairs, she was the lesser of two evils by a million. And you know, I felt bad for her. And here's the other thing. Even if you don't like her, he was going to be there. Bill, he was going to be in the White House. You loved him as a president. For all of Bill Clinton's flaws, he was a beloved president.
Yeah. All because he played the sax on, was it Arsenio?
Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
Arsenio Hall.
That started it.
Well, and the guy who helped him in America was the same guy that we were talking about at the beginning, Don Imus, the guy who Al Roker went off on. He helped get Clinton elected. I mean, it's interesting. I did meet George Bush II. I met him when he was in office, which was a cool, like that was a real great thrill. Because if you have the respect for the office, there's a point in this. This is not just name dropping. But if you have respect for the office, it's the highest position. It's the leader of the free world. And this idea that you have this guy that people fear will bring shame to the office. Like, that's the stuff of fiction. And that's scary. I remember when I met Bush, and I didn't vote for Bush, and you know, I had issues with Bush, but I met him. I was in reverence. I shook his hand. We took a picture. We had a whole talk. It was a whole thing. And I just remember going, oh, my God, I met the President of the United States.
Yep.
I want kids to feel that now, and I don't know how that happens.
With Trump, that's not going to happen. Because he doesn't have the respect of anyone. Well, a certain part of the people, obviously. But yeah, in general, no. They're just the guy on the TV.
Yeah. it's wild. And Obama inspired. I mean, the thing about Barack Obama that I was amazed with, my best friend who was killed last year, my best friend is an African-American. He played baseball. He was the guy that I spoke to every day. He was my best friend in the world. And he had two sons. And he traveled from Houston, Texas to Washington to be there for the inauguration, the first one in 08, because it inspired him. It inspired him to be a better person. I want that for the presidency. You know what I mean? I want a president that inspires people. I'm not asking him to solve all the world's problems. We have a crappy world. I know. I just want a president that I like, and we'll see.
The only positive thing I can see that I can say about Trump being president is he alone is not going to be running the country. You know, it's not him just saying, this is what we're going to do. you know, how many people work at the White House? How many people are in the Senate? All those people, even though they're, he's got the Senate and he's got everything else, there's still going to be people, if he comes up with some ridiculous thing, there's going to be people around him going, you can't do that.
Right.
He's not just going to have the, you know, world, the veto and say, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
There's going to be lots of things I'm sure he wants to do, and people around him will be like, that's not going to happen. Don't even mention that in public because it's impossible.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, all I can say
that's
is...
That's my only positive thing about it is because that's what people are worried about. He's going to come in and he's going to do all this stuff. There's a lot of stuff I'm sure he wants to do but won't be able to actually happen.
Well, we'll see. You know, I feel bad that, you know, for Muslim people that are scared right now. I feel bad for Mexicans that are frightened right now. If you're undocumented, you're more fearful than you were 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you worry. And, you know, I worry about gay and lesbian people who are trying to get married. I worry about people who need to have abortions or want to have abortions.
Yeah.
I worry about a lot of those things. And it's one of those scenarios where America has to make statements. And I want him to be a successful president. I live in this country. I want this country to be great. I'm scared to death on how he's going to do it, but hey,
yes.
maybe he does it. You know, maybe he does it. And, you know, to tie this kind of all in a bow, it's the same thing like when we have this dissatisfaction with a perfect example. When Paisley Park had tour guides that didn't know how to give tours, I immediately were like, isn't there someone running this show? Like, that's how I feel about the election. Like, it's like, it's rudderless. It's like, it's absolutely rudderless, and it's like everyone's going to try to get their pound of flesh. Because that's exactly what happened with both topics. I mean, everyone just runs for their pound of flesh, and you just wonder how it's all going to work out.
Well, just today, I was watching the news, and a lot of Republicans are now angry at Trump because one of his biggest campaign things was he's going to get a special prosecutor to get Hillary. And yeah, today he's like, nah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, he got rid of that.
He's only been president-elect for, what, 2 weeks? And he's already broken one of his biggest things.
Yeah.
Is anything going to be left by the time he actually becomes president in January?
Right, as he's building the wall to Mexico.
Oh, no, now it's a metaphorical wall. He didn't literally mean a wall.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying now to try and, like, backtrack on it.
Yep.
It's like I said, he's an entertainer. He says these big things to get all the media. Yeah, how much free media did he get in this campaign?
Sure.
Probably 10-1 on Hillary.
But she spent more money.
Yeah, because she had to pay for it, because she wasn't saying ridiculous things that got free coverage.
Right.
It's just
she won. She won all the debates, and he got elected.
She just wasn't a good campaigner. She might be a good politician, but she's not a good campaigner. But Trump is an entertainer. He can do those rallies and get everyone, you know, fired up, and that's what did it.
Yep. And, you know, there's a lot of good comedians that impersonate him.
Yeah. Well, I thought Alec Baldwin said he wasn't going to do it anymore, and then he turned up again.
Who knows?
This week.
Who knows?
I think he wants to get it out of his system. I think when he actually becomes president, he might stop doing it.
Saturday Night Live did the best Prince tribute of all of them.
They did a whole show, didn't they?
All they did was they played his 89, 96, 2014. Oh, and 82.
Yep.
He played all four appearances, showed 3 minutes of footage from their after party.
Yep.
Perfect. And did the Fred Armisen.
Yeah.
Perfect. I was surprised, and I think if the election didn't go the way it did, Dave Chappelle hosted the week after, and I thought he was going to do some Prince thing, but they were busy doing election stuff. So
if only we had another 3 hours to talk about Trump.
Yeah. Well, and you don't have to repeat. That's the other thing. Like
these newscasters.
Like, it's not like you're telling the same story. You know, one thing you hate is when somebody tells you the same story over and over and over again. It's all news stuff. And if we do this again in 2 weeks, it's more news stuff. It's wild.
You'll never run out of things to say because he's done so much. And he hasn't even started yet. Anyway, this was episode 10. And as I've said, probably every show, who knows when there'll be another one? If there is another one.
If there is another one.
It was 10 or 11 months since the last one because I just didn't have really much to say. And I didn't have anyone to talk to. And You did nine.
You figure you might as well do 10.
Because like I said, I'm not running around chasing people for interviews. I might send one tweet or an email, a And that's it. If I don't get a reply, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
you should delete my prerogative off your iPhone. Good to talk to you, brother.
We could do this again.
Yeah, anytime. Anytime.
We need to catch up and talk anyway, so let's just make it a show.
That's right.
That's the easy way.
Right. Because when you just try to make a conversation, that's impossible.
Yeah. Now, this is good. Let's not talk at all offline. Just occasional tweets. That's it.
There you
go. And then we'll be like, yeah, let's do a show. And then we can catch up on all the stuff. That's the easy way to do it.
Very nice.
So plug your show. What's your shows? Your
The podcast.
Sports, radio,
okay.
And podcast.
Yeah, we do. I mean, the ones that I care about, the sports one is called Sports with Friends. Basically, every guest is a friend.
It sounds like Words with Friends.
That's the play. It's the play on it. It was Words with Friends, Sports with Friends. And it's fun. We have it's very sports centric, but we have some really good guests and good topics. We had we've had some Hall of Fame athletes. I mean, it's been some great stuff. That's a lot of fun. That one has like 80-something episodes now. And then the comic book one, that's a lot of fun too. We're coming up with episode 50. I need a big episode 50. Hall of Justice, which is a comic book podcast where we try to do, you know, pop culture stuff. So all the superhero movies and Star Wars and all the Netflix shows. We did a Luke Cage review.
So there's The Flash and Supergirl and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, all those. And it's just so much fun because the people who listen to that, there's a lot of sports content in the world, but this is now becoming a mainstream. And the reactions that we've gotten, one of the neatest things, you'll like this, we spoil movies because they're podcasts, so they're buyer beware. So what happens is a movie comes out. We tried this with Star Wars. This was the first time we tried it because these two guys were like, I can't do a review without spoiling it. And so we said, all right, screw it. Let's do it. But we'll put a warning. And so we said, warn, do not press play if you don't want to know.
Yeah.
And all the secrets are revealed.
Yeah.
And that got more downloads than anything. Like, people want to have that platform where – they appreciate that you're not going on Twitter going, you know, Han Solo gets killed.
Yeah.
Spoiler
alert. Yeah. Han Solo gets killed.
Well, the movie's been out for a year. But if there's people who, like, they want to hear that, and you can't get that in mainstream media. Mm. So to have a professionally done podcast that's going to spoil a movie, like if I saw X-Men, I want to talk about X-Men. I want to hear two guys talking about X-Men. You know what I mean? Like, that's how.
And not dancing around trying not to spoil things. Yeah.
Right. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. And we just did a review. We reviewed Luke Cage, which was the Netflix show. And the different perspectives that you get is really, really fascinating. I love it. It's so much fun.
So go and listen. Where's that? iTunes?
Yeah, iTunes. You can do it through Audioboom. That's the company now. But yeah, iTunes, Stitcher. You know, wherever you find podcasts, you find them. Google. Just Google it.
Googly. Googly Moogly. Who was that? Frank Zappa said that, I think.
Yeah, if you go to iTunes and you type my name, you hear all these crazy radio appearances that I did that I didn't realize people were recording.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
There's a lot of that.
Okay.
All right, man.
Thank you very much, Seth Everett. We talked about things. That was the plan. We did it. Mission accomplished.
We talked about things.
That was the goal. We're done. Until next time, episode 11, if that ever actually happens, wait and see. Hopefully it's not another 11 months.
Well, let me be the most recent episode for a while.
Yeah, leave it up for a while. Done. Bang. Here's some theme music.